From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 24th day of September 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Blaisdell of the Anderson's Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana. And along the way, Illinois State Representative Naomi Jacobson will join us. She, like many others around the state, has taken the food bank challenge to eat for 7 days on just $25. She even made her husband do it. We'll talk with her about the challenge, food security, and food insecurity. And we'll close out the first half hour of the show with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated. He'll help us discuss today's agricultural weather forecast for growing regions all around the planet. And then on most of these radio stations, and of course on our website at willag.org, and as a podcast, we'll continue with our Harvest Hour interviews. Gary Schnitke, U of I Farm Management Specialist, will be in studio as our guest. So go take a look at the Farm Doc site to see his work, or just stay tuned to this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
On a Tuesday afternoon, futures finished like this in Chicago. Nearby December wheat, 20 and a quarter cents the loss at 7.30 and a quarter on the settlement price. March contract down 19 and a half at 7.50 and three quarters, and May at $7.65 finished 18 and a half cents lower. December contract in the corn pit up 2 3/4, 5.63 the settlement price, a gain of 2 3/4 cents a bushel for the December corn. March futures 5.80 and a half, 2 1/2 higher. The May contract at 5.92 and a quarter up 3. And July corn futures at $6.01, 2 3/4 higher. November soybeans unchanged, $11.87. January at 12.03 3/4 unchanged as well. March at 12.17 1/2 down 3/4, and the May contract lost 0.75 cents to settle at $12.29 1/2. October bean meal 3.27.60 up 2.30. October bean oil at 47.70 down 4 cents. October live cattle at 102.17 1/2, 2 1/2 cents the loss. December gained 7 1/2 cents to settle at $104.20. September feeder cattle at 107.70, a dime higher, and the October lean hog futures at 68.95 finished 50 cents higher on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like on a Tuesday afternoon. November crude oil futures 91 cents lower at this hour. The trade at $105.70. December futures at $107.15, $1.68 higher. Ethanol at $2.26.5, 3 cents higher. Natural gas at $7.68.3, down 24 7/10. And the RBOB gasoline at $2.59.4. It's just about unchanged. Heating oil, diesel fuel, $3.01. A penny and 3/10 higher. October propane at $1.57, $1.50 higher, as is the November. That's actually a penny and a half higher. And the November at $1.58 now on its trade. A gold futures, $3.50 higher, $889 an ounce. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 108.67 is up 13 points. The U.S. dollar at 76.82 at 12 points higher. CRB index at 367.23 is down 0.19 on the afternoon, and the Goldman Sachs is currently trading at 657.04. That's down 3.86 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Keezer. He says in northern and central parts of Illinois and northwestern Indiana, it'll be partly to mostly cloudy. A few widely scattered showers this evening. Elsewhere, mostly clear. Lows will range from 50 in northwestern Illinois to 60 in Chicago and Indianapolis. Tomorrow, mostly sunny. Highs will range from 78 in northwestern Illinois and near Lake Michigan to 85 in the deep south. The extended forecast, dry weather expected in all of Illinois and Indiana on Friday and most of the two states on Saturday. On Saturday, a few showers might occur in northwestern Illinois and also in eastern Indiana. Temps should remain a bit above average with highs in the upper 70s and 80s and lows in the 50s and the 60s through at least Sunday.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
On a Tuesday afternoon, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, joins us to talk about the commodity markets in Chicago and New York. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Where do you want to start today?
Well, it's been a historic 24 hours. Yesterday, during the hearings with the Paulson and Bernanke, the financial world came away from it as basically very little progress being made. And I always have to smile. Jim Cramer basically said he thought that the senators were a little out of touch with reality. Overnight, Buffett paid $5 billion for a large share of Goldman Sachs, and quite a deal, and I would love to buy $1 million worth of the stock at his same price and his same terms, but he got the job done because he had $5 billion. He is, of course, a very strong Democrat and very, I think, the second wealthiest man in the Forbes 400, and I think that as a result of that, the tone of the commodity markets and stock markets changed overnight, and we did see a different tone in these hearings in Washington that's being taking place today. The general feeling is, of course, is that without this bailout, it's hard for the U.S. economy to function very well. Oil prices will probably stabilize, and indirectly, if oil prices stabilize, corn, soybean prices will stabilize as well. The president is going to speak tonight to the nation, and hopefully, and that the polls indicate that there will probably be something passed between Friday or Monday of near term. So some things are going to happen quickly in Washington, and I hope it happens just to bring stability to the economic system. Buffett did mention one thing that he said last week. He said the economic system was a dysfunctioning economic system, and it came pretty close to some important problems in the stock and the world stock market, and that's always scary when somebody of his prominence makes that kind of a statement.
Does Paul Cooley think $700 billion is worth the bailout, or is it something lower than that?
Oh, I think that it probably is going to won't cost the taxpayers $700 billion. They'll get a return on it. I think that it's something that's necessary to take those non-functioning loans and take them to someone that where they can, in time, turn cash into the economic system so they can make loans and stabilize the economic system.
Yeah, on the loans, I can understand the loans. What do you think about the bad debt that would be just speculative debt? For instance,
well,
they're
buying a lot of that at 25 cents on the dollar or 50, and I guess these loan portfolios, they have a basket of them, basically are based on the performing and non-performing. And, you know, Merrill Lynch, I guess, dumped a lot of theirs at 22% of value. So are they that bad, or did they have to sell them to at a distressed price? And that's where some of the debate is. They're basically hammering those details out very well, and Mr. Buffett is basically giving high grades to Paulson and Bernanke for the job they're doing and some of the innovation. So, and he basically even said he'd go to Washington to help pass the bill. It'd be awfully hard to turn him down, too.
I bet. Let's talk about how this rolls into the commodity markets. Crude oil is pretty obvious, and most people are tying the price of crude to this, but the commodity markets and maybe the U.S. dollar. Can you talk about those two in conjunction with what happens in Chicago and how this may or may not stabilize the markets and where you think things are headed?
Yeah. Well, a couple things that you know, there was a headline in the Wall Street Journal today that T-Bone Pickens basically lost $1 billion with his funds, and he likes to trade oil. But it definitely the idea that big business and small business needs money to operate, and sometimes they need credit. And as a result of that, you know, we basically, the farmers at harvest time here, it takes a world of credit out here to run soybean and corn processing and country elevators. The farmer basically knows that there's not going to be enough acres next year for corn and soybeans planted, and we're going to have to rob a lot of acreage out of pasture, cotton, and wheat. And number two, we are harvesting now, and we are of the opinion that the USDA is pretty close to right. Some of these early bean yields are somewhat better, but I think the corn yields will be a little worse. The third thing here is, in order to gain worldwide production, we have to gain that acreage probably out of Brazil, and it costs a lot to move additional volumes of grain through transportation, and also costs a lot to put that ground into production. And we are basically looking at inflation, real inflation. It's all going to cost us more to play the game. And, you know, so as a result of that, with energy stabilizing, corn and soybean oil has a tendency to stabilize, too. So we did see a major fund, AIG, sell volumes of commodities in the marketplace today, and it probably signals that business with the commodity funds, index funds, aren't going to be the same as it was 6 months to a year to 2 years ago.
Would you land in the same place that our Commodity Week guest and panelist landed? At least the panelist in studio all landed on the idea that they, you know, that the markets would go, if the financial markets faded, that everything would go, but that at this point they were still feeling at least friendly, if not bullish, to corn and soybean prices.
Well, we have to stabilize the marketplace. And if everything else is stabilized, the necessity to, with demand at the present levels, we do have to grow corn and soybean acreage in order to meet demand. And that's where the big stabilizing influence and the hope for Mr. Farmer out here putting this corn and soybean crop away.
Hey, I got one final question.
Sure.
For you. I assume that since you like the Goldman Sachs, you already owned it. Did you make a sale when it went up today?
No, I tell you what. Goldman Sachs is a basically was one of the ones that didn't get clipped, so to speak, in the subprime market. It also interesting to point out that Paulson was chairman of Goldman Sachs, and it is interesting that Buffett basically picked the one that probably has a lot of very successful people there running it as a big investment that he made. So would I buy Goldman Sachs? You know, it's probably a good investment. I don't have any of it, though, at this time.
Okay, thanks,
Maybe
Paul.
Maybe my mutual funds have, but I personally don't have any.
Okay, thanks, Paul.
Have a good one.
You too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report, public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by State Representative for the 103rd District in Urbana, Illinois, Naomi Jacobson, this afternoon. She and I are both participating in the $25 Eastern Illinois Food Bank Challenge this week. Now, by way of default, I'll tell you that I sit on the Eastern Illinois Food Bank Board, so I do this for a reason in particular. But from the farm gate to the consumer's plate is oftentimes a very long ways, and we need to understand both ends of that particular food chain and who's left out of it. Naomi Jacobson, thank you very much for joining us today. I appreciate you taking the challenge. How's it going?
Well, you know, so far it's going all right. When I did my grocery shopping over the weekend, I thought of, you know, shopping for two, because I asked my husband if he would be willing to do this also. And I was actually able to come just a little bit under the $50.
Oh, how did you do that?
Well, I looked for things that were on sale. And when I was buying pasta, you know, I didn't buy whole wheat pasta like I might have done otherwise. But there was a store brand that was on sale. I'm not a meat eater, so I didn't buy chicken, but I did buy cottage cheese, you know, so I was thinking of replacements that would be okay. But I was just watching very, very carefully, thinking about the quantities I was buying. It wasn't necessary, and I think maybe some of us who, you know, have the means, we buy more food than we need to. So I was trying to make sure that I was buying things that were really going to be consumed in the week.
Yeah, it was interesting. Last night you and I were both involved in a meeting at the Champaign County Champaign Library, talking about obesity and nutrition and young people who don't get enough nutrition, young people who are on their own sometimes, and the hungry in general across the eastern part of Illinois. And did you think much about the nutritional value? Apparently you did of that $50, but that's really the hard part to make work, isn't it?
I think that's the hard part to make work because very often the foods that are inexpensive and easily obtained are not necessarily high in nutrition. One of the things that helped me be able to maintain some of the nutritional balance that I always like to see is, before I went to the store, I called one of my daughters who has a garden. And I've never asked my children for food. But I did. I asked her if she had anything that we might be able to have for the coming week. And she gave me a couple of squash and some tomatoes and some apples. So I've got more fruit than would have been on the menu. You know, so I didn't need to have as many bananas as the menu would have allowed, because we do have apples that were free. And I'm sure that that's a difficult thing for people to have to do.
Indeed, and it highlights one of those areas that those of us who have discussions about food and food availability talk about a lot of the time, which is food insecurity, or food security if you want to do the flip, and the availability of foods locally grown, which is important in the grand scheme of things, and at a very personal level as well. So personally, you had food security because you could go to your daughter and ask, hey, do you have something from the garden? But that food security is a much broader issue than just being hungry or the nutritional value of the food that might be available on your plate.
Yes, I think being hungry, really hungry, which, Todd, I don't think you and I are experiencing that.
No, not yet.
Being really hungry has long-term effects that food insecurity or security, I'm not sure which is the right term for it. But several years ago, really several years ago, my husband and I have several children. We've adopted six of our children. We have taken in foster children. And one time when foster children were placed with us, they had come from Champaign County, and I think this is one of the things we're trying to make aware, is that there's hunger in Champaign County. These children were from Champaign County, and the more they were with us, we discovered, you know, things that they didn't have access to. But there was a day, and this was after they were with us for two or three months, maybe. It was in the summertime, and it was lunchtime, and, you know, everybody was home. I probably had eight or nine children around here, and I was fixing lunch. And those who wanted me to fix them something, I did it. But the older children would go to the refrigerator and say, hey, can we have some of these leftovers? And so the table would, you know, have an eclectic variety of food. And the kids would fix their plates. And then sometimes somebody might say, oh, I didn't see any of that. Could I have a bite? And it was a given, sure. Well, one of my older sons did that to one of these little ones. And she cried. And it wasn't that there wasn't enough food for her. And she had been eating well for, you know, a couple of months. But it occurred to me the insecurity that she had about hunger and about lack of food.
It's truly the definition of food insecurity, is that sometimes you go hungry during the day and that you don't have the nutrition. Food security, of course, is, as we talked about, is a little different. That's the availability of local foods that
right.
might be there, that's there in an ample and plentiful supply and can be accessible. But the food insecurity part is, even if it's there, you can't afford to get to it.
Mm-hmm.
And these are big problems that even in this part of the world we have to tackle. I think there are more than 100,000 people in the 14 counties that the Eastern Illinois Food Bank serves that goes hungry by the stats. And it's something that, well, we try to do something about. It's a good thing to try to do something about, but it's hard to tackle. It really is. And we're thankful, Naomi, that folks like you are on board and trying to meet the $25 challenge.
Trying to do it, and thank everybody at the food bank for the work that they do. You know, I think Jim Hires does a great job, but wouldn't it be nice if he didn't need that job?
Yeah, it would. Naomi, thanks much.
You're welcome.
Naomi Jacobson is the 103rd District State Representative in Urbana. She's a Democrat, joining us here this afternoon on the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
It's a Tuesday afternoon. Time to take a look at the cash grain market. Matt Blaisdell of the Delphi Climbers facility that belongs to the Andersons is with us. Good afternoon to you from Indiana.
Good afternoon.
How's the cash flow in your area for grain at this time?
Going pretty well. Guys, for the most part, to the south of us, are into bean harvest. Here, where we sit in Climbers and to the north of us, are starting on maize, some of the earlier varieties on beans. Here with the Indiana and our quarter are having quite a bit of a processor influence on the beans. Here last week, we had some pretty good values for some quick ship beans as the processors were running a little short and a little squirmish here going into harvest. Those have since gone away. Some guys are still showing some, you know, 20 or 30 under at the processors, but other processors have gone to the all fall bid here. Looking like guys and more guys are going to start switching over to corn harvest here this weekend into the first of next week.
How are the yields on the beans?
The earlier varieties that were probably harvested about 10 days ago, you know, the first ones out of the field, were a little dismal around the 42 to 47 range. Now, as we got into harvest with everybody going and a larger sample size, most guys are probably calling for an average of, 55 to maybe 57. Had some guys on some better dirt. It was irrigated soil that it went to almost 70 bushels an acre.
What are your bids for the day?
Bids today here for Climbers Corn, 531, and beans in the Delphi, 1119.
You expect cash grain bids to stay higher?
I expect they do. I expect corn here, as elevators start to really worry about filling their space, and as the early October trade market is starting to perk up here, I see a basis for the first half of harvest to get pretty stronger here.
Okay, thanks much, Matt.
Yep, thank you.
Matt Blaisdell is with the Andersons, joins us from the Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when Drew Lerner joins us.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. State regulators have approved a $162 million annual rate increase for Ameren Illinois' gas and electric customers. Today, the Illinois Commerce Commission rejected Ameren's original request for a $247 million increase. Ameren says the hike will fund infrastructure improvements throughout its service area. A consumer watchdog group says it will appeal the decision. Citizens Utility Board Executive Director David Collada says it comes at the worst possible time given the state of the economy. 2 weeks ago, the ICC approved a $270 million rate hike for ComEd customers. Both Ameren and ComEd were criticized earlier this year after Illinois consumers' power bills doubled and tripled when a 10-year rate freeze expired. The Illinois General Assembly has restored money to the budget to save more than 300 state jobs and keep state parks and historic sites open, but it still needs approval from Governor Rod Blagojevich. He hasn't been in the mood to go along with the legislature lately. Blagojevich cut $1.4 billion from the state budget in July because it wasn't balanced. That prompted an announcement of 325 layoffs and the closure of two dozen parks and historic sites. The legislature yesterday added $230 million to the budget to cover the shortfall, but Blagojevich must sign the bill, and he's vetoed or changed key pieces of legislation all summer. The governor's staff says the budget is still tight and revenues are slower than anticipated, so approving the budget restorations isn't a sure thing. The federal government's trying to get one of the lawsuits over the deaths of two Kentucky men at a Veterans Affairs Hospital in southern Illinois thrown out. The government contends James Marshall's widow didn't file an affidavit as required in her case and that she filed her suit in April too soon. A hearing officer for the State Board of Elections will consider a complaint against the person who challenged a state representative candidate's place on the November ballot. Frank Calabrese of Champaign filed the complaint, calling the challenge filed by Pat Devaney bogus. Devaney questioned a late paperwork filing when Calabrese was slated to run against incumbent Democrat Naomi Jacobson. It was rejected. I'm Tom Rogers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, joins us now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Fall is here, but it doesn't feel like it this afternoon.
Hey, you know, they can't complain about that, I think, right now. I think we've been extremely lucky and fortunate so far this year. These crops that were planted so late and were beat up by all the flooding earlier in the year, and now we've got some warm and dry weather going on. With, you know, we couldn't ask for a better scenario with the rough way we've started through the year. And it looks like it's going to stay favorable with a warm and dryish bias for a little while longer. There'll be a few showers that will spit and spat at the region, but I don't think we're going to have any kind of real meaningful rainfall until we get to early next week. There is a cool front that will show up towards the early part of next week, probably running from Monday into about Wednesday of next week. And during that period of time, we will see showers move across the majority of the Midwest. Most of the resulting rainfall will be on the light side, probably running a few hundredths of an inch up to five-tenths of an inch most often. What's interesting with this particular disturbance is it is expected to become one of those infamous cutoff low-pressure systems, and if it does verify in doing so, we're going to have showers wandering around across the Midwest for probably at least a few days next week. Nothing in the way of heavy rain, but some scattered showers occurring off and on that might interfere with some field work, and rain amounts would still be probably a few hundredths of an inch to a quarter of an inch most days, with a locally greater amount every once in a while.
So just an annoyance to the real start of harvest season across the Midwest then.
Right, and it certainly is not indicative of a new trend towards wet weather. That is not going to be the case.
Okay, so we've got warm weather, which should be good for conditions across the Midwest to give a little more length to the maturity of the crop, or at least time, I suppose, for it to mature. A little annoyance next week as we get started and more combines rolling across the field. And then everybody will be asking, it's starting to get towards that time of year when we're going to get cold at night, and really cold at night is the question.
Right, and I think that's going to have to be sometime a little later on in the month of October. The atmosphere right now is actually still being influenced by La Nina-like conditions, and that tends to promote a warm start to the autumn season, which we've already seen and will likely continue in the first half of October. But as time moves along into the second half of October, we'll start seeing better potentials for colder air to evolve. And as we get into November, I think it'll be a much cooler period of time with more frequent precipitation impacting portions of the region. I don't want to imply it's going to be real wet, rainy, and sloppy and cold, but it will be a trend towards that direction more so than the continuation of warm and dry.
Let's stay with the harvest season, except change continents and head to China. Tell me about it.
Well, China is doing all right. They had a lot of rain this summer. They needed to dry out. They have been doing so here recently. But it looks like there's going to be some more rain in east central portions of the country as we move forward over the coming week. Probably the biggest issue right now, the next few days, will be the frost and freezes that will occur in the northeast corner of the country, which is primary corn and soybean country. It looks like most of the crops are adequately mature to handle the cold, though.
Okay, thanks much.
Have a good day.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. For some of the radio stations and listeners, we'll say goodbye now. For the rest of you, stay with us, and we'll talk with Gary Schnitke, ag economist from the University of Illinois, about crop production cost. That all in this Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
What can your $25 do? Help build a member match fund for our fall pledge drive. Combined with contributions from your neighbors, your gift of $25, $50, or $100 or more has real impact on the vitality of WILL as a community resource. Send your check to WILL Radio, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, 61801, or give online at willpledge.org. If we all do a little, it can add up to a lot.
You're listening to an extended Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. In a few moments, we'll talk with Gary Schnitke. He's with the Farm Doc team here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, where he serves as a farm management specialist. On the line with us now is a specialist of a different sort. Scott Moe is with us from Wachovia to talk about Wall Street. How's things being handled in Wall Street on a turbulent time, Scott, today?
Well, the Dow and the NASDAQ are trading at a tight range after the markets consider Warren Buffett's move to buy a stake in Goldman Sachs, and Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke delivered a sobering assessment of the economy to a joint committee of Congress today. Bernanke said the U.S. is facing grave threats to financial stability. Tech stocks are boosting the NASDAQ after an analyst wrote that semiconductor stocks are attractive at current levels. A new report on housing was not encouraging. Many bank stocks face renewed pressure as short-term interest rates surged. Currently, New York advance decline is 9-7 negative on issues and 11-10 negative on volume. The Dow Jones Industrials are currently at 10,850. That's down 7 points on volume of just over 782 million shares trading hands. Transports are off 60 at 47.31. Utilities are down a point at 4.34. NASDAQ's up 12 at 2165, and the S&P 500 is unchanged at 1188. Currently, we have 1,353 advancing issues, 1,775 declining, with 56 issues unchanged on the day. On the interest rate front, the October bond is at 1.17 10/32. That was up 8/32 on the day, bringing the long bond yield to a 4.37. Oil closed at 105.16, down $1.45 a barrel, and a London afternoon gold fix is off $3 at $896 an ounce. Once again, the Dow Jones Industrials are currently at 10,850. That's off 7 points on the day. This is Scott Moe with Wachovia Securities. Have a great afternoon.
All right, thanks to Scott Moe and Wachovia for joining us right here on the Closing Market Report, the Harvest Hour edition on a Wednesday afternoon. I'll give you some phone numbers because I'd like you to join the conversation with Gary Schnitke of the Farm Doc team, farm management specialist and ag economist from the University of Illinois this afternoon. If you have questions for him as we get started in this program, please don't hesitate to dial in. The numbers are here, 217-333-9455. That's 217-333-9455 or 800, toll-free that is, 800-222-9455. That 9455 spells out WILL. So it's either 800-222-9455 or 217-333-9455. Gary, good afternoon. Thanks for making the trip to the north end of campus today.
No, thank you, Todd, for having me. It's a warm day.
It is a warm day. It's a good day to get corn to dry down, soybeans to dry down, and there'll be a few folks that are out harvesting this afternoon and probably thinking about next year's production cost as they watch those beans go into the head and maybe corn on occasion out there. But you've got some projections from the Farm Doc team and the Ag Economist here on campus. What does it look like for next year?
We're making our projections for 2009 for both corn and soybean cost. And the numbers that we're going to be using here today are for Central Illinois farms with high productivity farmland. And just to give you a feel for what that means, we would be projecting those that corn land for 2009 to have roughly 191 bushel expected corn yield. And as you would have, as everybody knows, production costs are projected to go up quite a lot for 2009 compared to 2008. And we're projecting non-land cost for corn to increase by about $180 per acre from 2008 to 2009 levels.
Holy smokes, that's a big jump. Is that all related to fuel cost and fertilizer cost? Or
It's related. The big two costs that are increasing are fertilizer and seed. And the big one is fertilizer. And as we all know, fertilizer costs have escalated quite dramatically this year. In our budgets, our projections for 2009, we're using a $1,000 anhydrous ammonia costs, a $1,000 phosphorus or costs, and $900 for potash. And those are actually pretty middle of the road projections right now. But those, if you use those costs, we're looking at a fertilizer cost per acre for corn at $210 an acre for next year. And just to give you a feel for that, that's $115 what we would project for 2008. And again, just to give you a feel for that.
So a $95 increase just in fertilizer?
Just in fertilizer. And again, we're basing that on $1,000 anhydrous ammonia cost, $1,000 per ton DAP cost, and then $900 potash cost. And you can get those. Anhydrous ammonia can be up a couple hundred bucks or down a couple hundred bucks, depending on when you timed or when the purchase was timed. And if anything, those prices are probably a bit higher now than when we made these projections.
So the other half of that non-land cost, if we got 95 that are fertilizer related out of the $180 jump, what's the other?
The other big one is our seed cost, and we're using $103 seed cost per acre. That's based on a $275 per unit. Cost for a triple stack, $200 per unit cost for the refuge, and assuming that 80% of the acre is planted to triple stack and 20% to the refuge. So that gives you a feel for what we're basing that $103 cost on, and that again is based on triple stack, 34,000 seed drop rate, which is probably low, if anything. Emerson Nafsinger and others in the crop science are saying we want seed
34, 36.
Yeah, so we would probably be looking at higher drop rates than we used in these budgets, but we might not be getting the discounts that some farmers might be getting as well.
And how much of an increase was that in the seed cost then?
That was basically, we're coming in at about $60 for 2008, so that's, you know, $40 or so an acre.
Yeah, so we're up to $155. We still have $25 to go.
Yeah.
Is there the rest of it fuel cost and such? Or?
Fuel cost, the other big area of increase is what we would call power cost.
Mm-hmm.
And those would be, you know, just as you noted, fuel cost going up. Also, we've been noticing and will continue to notice repair cost have increased. And, you know, the repair rates being charged have been going up. And depreciation is going up as well. And that's primarily related to, you know, farmers buying newer or updating their machinery line and increasing it.
And then very quickly, and we need to take a call, I believe, on line one at this point. But very quickly, do you have total cost of production for corn? And we'll come back to soybeans a bit later. So total cost of production for an acre of corn you've got projected at what for 2009?
We have that projected at $553 an acre of non-land cost. And that's every cost except land. So of that $553, you would have to add on your land cost, which if it's a cash rent farm, you would add cash rent onto it.
Mm.
This land probably would, you know, be looking at $200 cash rent minimum. That'll probably be about the average for this type of land in 2009. That would, you know, be $753 an acre of non-land cost, and we could go up from there, actually, if you are, you know, higher cash rents, higher fertilizer cost, and other items, then than what we're budgeting for here.
Break-even cost then is?
Well, we come, if we're using sort of a average cash rent and the costs that I've mentioned previously, we're looking at a break-evens in the $4 bushel range. So we need to see break-even corn prices above $4 for these numbers to work. And again, that's based on a $200 cash rent and the costs that we see projected in these budgets, which one of the things that I would say is that this year I think we're going to see, we always see a lot of variation in non-line costs across farms, but this year it's going to be bigger than ever because of timing of purchases is going to matter and a number of other factors. Another example of that is in our budgets, we budget $27 for crop insurance, mm-hmm. which is, if you look at it, could be low. But we're, you know, in this state, about 30% of the acres aren't insured at all. So that $27 an acre is, you know, 27% of it is a zero,
right.
So, you know, that's why we're going to see a pretty big wide variation in cost across farms.
Well, we've made somebody wait for quite a long time on line one. They joined us as soon as I gave the numbers out this morning, and we'll bring them into the conversation. If you'd like to join us, you can do that too. The number is 217-333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Line one, thanks for being very patient this afternoon. You have a question for Gary?
Thank you. I have a couple. I hope I can get them straight.
Okay.
First, in Gary's estimates that he's just given, are those estimates for corn that's used for food or corn that's going to be used for ethanol?
It would be either one. It's not a food grade.
So you're thinking food as in sweet corn and the kind of corn that you eat, or corn that would be processed?
Food products.
So this
edible versus fuel.
The answer is mostly it would be for most of it goes most of the corn, almost all of the corn that is produced in fields in the United States is feed fiber and fuel sorts of things. And it does go into food so that you do get portions of that corn product that go into food. But direct consumption food, sweet corn, is an entirely different product. And then there's white corn, which is produced into chips.
I'm more concerned about the costs of raising corn and then putting it in ethanol. And I'm also interested in your comment on the cost of water. That is 3 gallons of water from the Mahomet Aquifer for each gallon of ethanol produced. And I wondered if you could respond to how people think that's a good idea.
Well, the cost that I was presenting here would be for number 2 yellow corn, which would be used in ethanol and some food products like corn sweetener. It wouldn't be as Todd mentioned, sweet corn or the food grain corns. On top of what ethanol has to make or break it is next year compensating farmers in price enough to cover their cost, and that will then depend on what the price of fuels are at that point in time.
That's a reminder there. Thank you, listener, for being with us on this program. That's a reminder that we need to take a quick break. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. Gary Schnitke will stay with us until just before the top of the hour. You can stay with us as well, and we'll take your phone calls. I'll give you those numbers again in a moment on this Harvest Hour edition.
WILL programming is made possible by Tires Plus Total Car Care, located at Prospect and Market View in Champaign. Tires Plus provides complete car repair and maintenance. More information is available at 366-3201.
Here's the weather forecast for the two-state region from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Keezer. He says in northern and central Illinois and northwestern Indiana, it'll be partly to mostly cloudy with a few widely scattered showers tonight. Elsewhere, mostly clear. Lows will range from 50 in northwestern Illinois to 60 in Chicago and Indianapolis. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies. Highs will range from 78 in northwestern Illinois and near Lake Michigan to 85 in the south. Dry weather expected in all of Illinois and Indiana on Friday and most of the two states on Saturday. Saturday, a few showers might occur in northwestern Illinois and also in eastern Indiana, says Ed. Temps should remain a bit above average with highs in the upper 70s and the 80s and lows in the 50s and the 60s through at least Sunday of this week. A cold front should arrive next week. That'll trigger a few scattered showers Monday and Tuesday. Showers may linger right on into Wednesday. One model, the American GFS, actually predicts damp weather persisting through much of next week. Meanwhile, the other models move the showers out by Wednesday of next week. They're expected to be very light nonetheless. There's uncertainty on the timing of the arrival and departures of the showers during the week due to the part to that tropic weather system that's moving up the East Coast and disrupting the typical west to east flow of weather systems. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. That's a quick look at the weather from Chief Meteorologist Ed Keezer.
Support for today's broadcast comes from World Gourmet Foods, now at 105 Krispy Kreme Drive in Bloomington, with over 200 kinds of specialty extra virgin olive oil and more. Daily tasting and an extensive Saturday tasting with over 50 items. Information at worldgourmetfoods.com, bringing the taste of the world to Bloomington Normal.
You're listening to the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. In studio with us today, Gary Schnitke of the Farm Doc Team, Farm Management Specialist, Ag Economist, right here in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do that, listeners. 217-333-9455 is the number, or 800-222-9455. Probably the second part of that question from the listener we ought to take up. She did ask about ethanol and water use and for those plants. I think she thought maybe that we had discussed that earlier, but it's not a number I don't think that you would have worked with.
No, the numbers that I'm presenting don't really have ethanol cost or ethanol use in them. This is just the cost for a farmer producing an acre of corn in central Illinois.
Acre of corn, but let's talk about an acre of beans. Let's see, we had the acre of corn at... what was total cost? 500 and something plus cash rent or land cost?
553. Yep.
And soybeans?
We're coming up with a total cost there of $324 an acre. So, and that is also going up from last year, and it's going up by last year we would have projected it, or this year we would project it at $239 an acre, so we're going up about $85 an acre. Soybeans are going up less for two reasons. One is on the fertilizer side, they're not using nitrogen, so they don't have the large nitrogen cost increases. And seed cost are going up about a little bit less percentage-wise, but we're coming up with a seed cost of $55 an acre for soybeans, which is... you know, about half of what it is in corn.
Does it give farmers the economic advantage to plant soybeans then?
You know, we've heard a lot of concerns or questions about, well, maybe, you know, soybean costs are going up less, so maybe we should be switching to soybeans rather than corn. We don't see that in our budgets. If anything, corn is still much more profitable than soybeans. And in the current budgets we're looking at, just plugging in, and these are really conservative prices, $4.80 for corn, $11 for soybeans.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if anything, that's more conservative on corn than soybeans. $4.80 would be pretty low for what? Well, just to give you a feel here, on the December 2009 corn contract is trading at right around $6 an acre or $6 a bushel. So, you know, that would suggest a $5.50 price. But even using those relatively, you know, low prices and favoring soybeans rather than the corn, we're coming up with there being a $94 advantage for corn over soybeans. And that, just to give you a feel for that, over the, you know, from 2000 to 2007, the average was right around $45 to $50 an acre. So if anything, our numbers, even though costs are going up more for corn, there's still a significant advantage profitability-wise for corn versus soybeans.
Gary, another caller has joined us this afternoon, again on line one. Good afternoon, caller. You have a question or comment that you'd like to make this afternoon?
Just a comment.
Sure.
On the water usage, the lady said it takes 3 gallons of water to make ethanol, and that's correct. But it takes 7 gallons of water to make regular gasoline. So ethanol is quite a good deal when it comes to water usage. That's the only comment I want to make.
All right. Thank you very much for calling in this afternoon. If you'd like to join that conversation with Gary Schnittke, you can. The phone number is 217-333-9455. We really only have a couple of minutes left. Maybe we should take up something that you and I will both be doing this winter in the month of December. I think, what is it, the 15th, 16th, 17th? Oh, no, it's the 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th of December. The 2009 Farm Economics Summits are scheduled across the state of Illinois. Tell me about them.
Well, the Farm Economic Summits are a series of meetings that we are going to be doing around Illinois. It's going to be by faculty within the Department of Agricultural and Consumer Economics. This year, the focus is going to be on just the higher, more volatile price and cost environment we're in. And we're also going to be talking a bit about, you know, the implications of all the financial situation that we currently face and how that might play out for agriculture. Those will be day-long meetings. They, again, occur 16th through 19th. And
I know the last one is in Sycamore because I looked that up today thinking about how I would get through Commodity Week, which is recorded on Friday afternoon, and I won't be able to get back to here from Sycamore that afternoon. And then, of course, we're looking at two other dates that we have to fill for Christmas and New Year's on Commodity Week and how that might get done as well. You don't have the other three dates? I probably do.
I have the dates. I don't have the location.
Well, I can probably find those here in a bit.
18th.
Maybe you can talk about who should maybe attend those particular meetings.
This is targeted towards farmers and other agricultural professionals that work directly with commercial agriculture. Again, Daryl Good will be on the program doing Commodity Outlook. Dale Latz will be talking about farm incomes for 2008 and 2009. There will be discussions on crop rotations and crop cost and a general discussion of marketing given crop insurance choices, along with the acre discussion on whether we should be making that move to acre in the coming year.
Gary Schnittke, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Gary Schnittke is a farm management specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can see more from him on the FarmDoc website. Just type FarmDoc into Google. The dates are the 16th in Mount Vernon and Holiday Inn. Bloomington at the Interstate Center on the 17th. We'll be in Galesburg on the 18th of December for the Best Western, which is formerly the Jumers, and Sycamore at the Center for Agriculture on the 19th. You've been listening to the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report.